Those hoping for a nice spring rebound for the U.S. labor market were left mainly with their hope today. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The economy created just 138,000 jobs in May, we learned, and the number of people on payrolls in March and April were also revised downward. Christopher Lowe is chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. He's not seeing silver linings here. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, David. Yeah, you can always count on an economist for a dismal slant. So we're looking at pretty much wall-to-wall ugly this month, 66,000 cumulative downward revision to March and April. Looking at the service side, there are some really troubling trends. Further job losses in retail, for example, it's a sector that's just been hammered all year. Job losses in information, which includes the things like the internet and IT, but also includes the newspaper industry. So add it all up, and it's just sort of lackluster job growth with average hourly earnings growth that was a little bit weaker than expected as well.
Well, not to sound Pollyanna, but I do have to point out that the unemployment rate went down, lowest since May of 2001. There's that.
But this month, anyway, it happened for the wrong reason. We actually had over 400,000 people fall out of the labor force. Now, I don't want to put too much emphasis on that because it's a really small sample size. But from the Fed's point of view, I suspect they're going to see this as potentially inflationary later this year. So the kind of weakness suggesting second quarter GDP bounce won't be great, but the Fed needs to keep tightening anyway.
All right. Well, that's later this month. They meet Christopher Lowe at FTN Financial. Thank you.
You're welcome, David.
Hi, David Brancaccio, stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. Marketplace is here because these days I think it's essential to have an independent source exploring how the economy really works, not just for the market participants or the financial geniuses, but for everyone. Your support keeps our kind of reporting coming, and it is especially vital now at the end of our fiscal year. If you could, visit marketplace.org/donate to contribute and to keep us on the beat. Thank you. As we look at President Trump's decision to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement, let's take a moment here to explore some practical angles. Andrew Light is a former senior climate policy negotiator for the U.S. State Department. He's now at the World Resources Institute. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Many watching the president's speech yesterday were left with, I think, the impression that the Paris Accord is a hard contract. You're acquainted with the nuts and bolts of it. How much wiggle room was built into the system the U.S. is now leaving?
The Paris Agreement is built on domestic pledges. Every country structures their pledges around what they think is their best path forward. The Paris Agreement itself is not constructed in such a way that it determines the pathways that different countries will take to hit emissions reductions or how they'll restructure their economy or anything. What President Trump was talking about yesterday in the Rose Garden certainly was not the agreement that I helped to negotiate.
President Trump also criticized the agreement for being, in his words, a massive redistribution of United States wealth. He doesn't want, I think it's $100 billion American dollars going to poor countries to help them mitigate the effects of climate change per year by 2020. That's all, Andrew, taxpayer money?
No, not at all. When the target of mobilizing $100 billion was originally decided in 2009 in Copenhagen, it was stipulated that this money would come from all sources, public and private. What it's actually going to cost out there in the world for a transition to deal with this problem is not going to be $100 billion on the nose exactly. It's going to be about creating investment opportunities out there in the world that is going to make money for companies, that's going to help people to become more resilient. And again, I really don't know what President Trump was referring to when he was suggesting that the Paris Agreement itself is taking money from one part of the world and forcing people to give it to those in other parts of the world.
But the expectation was that some of this money would be private sector then.
And it is. And that's what we're seeing today. I mean, the economy globally is booming in renewable energy and energy efficiency. The commitments in Paris have created a market that's going to grow to around $1 trillion a year. And the U.S., by pulling out of the Paris Agreement in the way that it is, or signaling that we don't actually care about this problem anymore, is putting us in a very bad place to try to compete in that market. Countries like China are just going to step in and scoop up all of that instead of us.
Andrew Light is now at the World Resources Institute. He's a former senior climate negotiator at the State Department. Mr. Light, thank you.
Thank you, David.
The president's decision, as Mr. Light just said, comes as renewable energy sources do play a growing role in powering the U.S. The U.S. Energy Information Administration has some new data this week showing that more than 10% of U.S. electricity does come from renewable sources, wind and solar, in the first quarter of this year. That is well above what the federal agency had forecast earlier. Marketplace's Aaron Schrank reports on that.
The wind and solar industries have been growing fast. One reason, tax credits, says Rob Godbee at the University of Wyoming. Congress put credits for renewable energy companies in place in 2015 to spur more growth. They're available until 2021 and drop by 20% each year.
The way it phases down year after year created a lot of incentive to get projects started now.
MIT Energy Studies professor Jessica Trancic says we've seen the benefit of public policies driving the market and private companies driving down costs.
So that's led to this really impressive growth, and it's growth that has surpassed most forecasts.
Back in 2012, the Energy Information Administration predicted we wouldn't see renewables generating this much electricity until 2035. Trancic says the federal agency didn't foresee the explosion of private innovation.
It's becoming more widely understood that these models have underestimated rates of technological improvement.
Trancic says the growth of wind and solar shows that incentives work. I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
Note that the Paris Climate Agreement is structured so that the United States, and any country really, cannot formally withdraw until the day after the next U.S. presidential election, if you do the math. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.